103. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Dave Jameson Show on Edmonton Sports Center, TSN 1260. Tom Gazzola and Matthew Iwanek with you. I'm coming at you from Calgary. Cold, dreary, windy here in Calgary. How's Edmonton doing, Matty, today?
Sorry, I was just saying hi to Connor there.
Oh, Connor, how's the question? How is the weather back home?
Oh, it's raining. Has it stopped raining? It looks like it stopped raining outside the West End here, at least. It was pouring pretty good as it was coming into the station. I will say this. Like, one, matches Edmonton's mood perfectly today.
Yeah.
Two, we need the rain, so it's going to be good. It'll make things nice and green.
Good.
You know,
get it
for
lush.
The golf game and all of that as we go out.
Exactly. Not any better here in Cowtown. Again, it's kind of dreary and windy. It shut down the red lot here. So, there you go. It's not very nice down here as we get set for game two between the Oilers and the Flames. The Oilers did speak at a media availability earlier. We will get to that audio later on in the show. We do have Eric Thomas coming up from Raceline Radio as well. We'll do a little bit of F1 talk as we roll on up until the Jason Krager Show, which comes at you at 2 p.m. Let's get to some texts. If you want to join the conversation, send us a note at the James H. Brown Alberta Injury Lawyers inbox, 101260. James H. Brown, Alberta Injury Lawyers. When accidents happen, go to jameshbrown.com. This text out of Grand Prairie says, the better checking team usually wins in the playoffs. I thought that the Oilers got that figured out against LA. That comes in from Bully the Bully. At times they did get it going against LA, but when they laid off is when LA started to get momentum in games. The forechecking or general checking from the Oilers last night was non-existent. A lot of elements of Edmonton's game was non-existent last night. Somehow they still managed to tie it up. Markstrom, a weak night. Smith and Koskinen, same thing. All three goalies, rough performances. We'll see how the Oilers regroup for game two. They generally, under Jay Woodcroft, have bounced back really well. Another text that we read prior to cutting to break that came from Mark said, what's with Nurse? What happened to his physicality? Thank you, Mark. I think it's simply put, he's hurt himself. We knew he was banged up heading into the playoffs. He missed the last four games of the regular season. Got tied up with JT Compher in that one game. It looked like a harmless play against the Avs. And, you know, you tweak something and it's not there for him. So, I mean, he among many had a rough night last night. No doubt about that. But the severity of whatever he's dealing with in that leg, knee, is clearly hampering him. Yeah, the physicality isn't there from Darnell Nurse. Could he ramp it up? Could he gut it out? Yeah. Let's see if he does tomorrow night in game two. You can say that about a lot of guys. There wasn't much physical play. One text out of GP says, if Cassian beats Lucic in a fight, Edmonton gains momentum. Well, if they fight, I know they're friends off the ice, but on the ice, friends off, right? That's a tall order for Zach Cassian. Lucic is a tough customer. He didn't ragdoll Cassian last night at the end of the game, but he got a good chunk of him, knocked him down. Little skirmish at the end of the game. Wes McCauley telling the scorekeepers and the guys that run the clock to let it run down while that skirmish was happening. Trying to keep the peace, quote unquote. Sure, if Cassian were to beat Milan Lucic in a fight, it would create a ton of momentum, and I bet everybody on the bench would grow an inch and gain 15 pounds of muscle immediately, but I don't know if A, that even happens, and B, if Cassian could get the better of Milan Lucic. I suppose it's possible. Another text says, bring in Malone for Cassian and Archibald and have them smash the Flames. So Malone with Cassian and Archibald, that's what I get from that text. I don't know if the Black Aces are going to get in. You've got other veteran players that haven't been playing. Warren Fogle hasn't been playing the last few games. Devin Shore, Derek Brassard. Would you play a guy from Bakersfield ahead of guys that are veteran NHLers that you've had sitting on the shelf? I think that's unlikely.
I would say that speaks to you know, what you're thinking you're going to accomplish this the rest of these playoffs. You go to Black Aces, and I'm going to make this comment about Stuart Skinner even to a large degree. You're focusing on next year, not on this year more so.
Mm-hmm.
You're focusing on getting them experience as opposed to attempting to try to win this series. And you're potentially putting those players at risk of hurting their confidence moving forward in their evolution.
We had a text from Richard, said, JP out. Devin Shore could do a better job, speedier and more defensively responsible. Yeah, I mean, what kind of effect, if you were to bring in a guy like that, would they really have? Don't get me wrong, Puljujärvi's game, MIA for the majority of the postseason. No confidence, clearly. Puck touches are tough. Not a lot happening when he does get a handle on it. No physical play from Puljujärvi. I know he's not necessarily known from that, but he's a big boy. He can throw his body around.
The one thing I say is, like, how much are we, like, can you really, you know, I know they tied the game, but the game was also 3-0 6 minutes into the first.
Right.
How much are we really reading into everything? How much can you really read into everything?
I mean, I'll reiterate, if Jay Woodcroft and the coaching staff are going over a ton of video from last night, I would be surprised. That game was so odd in a number of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you could build off of? No. What could you pick apart? Essentially everything. It was just a disaster all around. And again, somehow they wound up at 6-6. Early in the third period. Cal says, Oilers just need to ignore all the sideshows and play. When they do that, they play much better. Calgary can't get in their head. That's a fair point, Cal. Don't let them get under your skin. We saw LA do it to Zach Cassian, especially in Game 5. They did it to Evander Kane in Game 4 and 5. Whistle to whistle. Play between the whistles. Yes, there's going to be skirmishes. Yes, there's going to be that extra stuff. But scrum discipline, as Jay Woodcroft put it last week, is important. A term I had never really thought of before. But scrum discipline, a focal point. That's a good point, Cal. Thanks for the text. Appreciate it. 10-12-60. James H. Brown, Alberta Injury Lawyers inbox if you want to get in on the discussion. Cranky Goat says, I'm exhausted with the wasted ice time of JP, the Bison King. Also, the soft game and giveaways of Bouchard. Next game to the press box. JP, Ryan Bouchard drawing in Fogel, Brassard, Niemelainen, Kulak plays right D, and Russell and Nemo to split shifts. I want to, you know, with that much change, it would change the dynamic. You would have more physical players to a certain extent. I don't think Bouchard goes to the press box. These are tough lessons that he's learning. The young defenseman. Yes, Duncan Keith has had his struggles. Didn't have a particularly good game yesterday either. I think everybody needs to bounce back tomorrow. Well, everybody.
And I think let's draw on the first round. You know, game one loss, it wasn't a bloat or any sense or anything terrible, but you know, they stuck with Mike Smith going into game two. There wasn't even a question. After game five going into game six, while the Oilers tied it, you know, they weren't the Kings controlled a lot of that game or were in lead for quite a bit of that game. And after that game five loss, so many people wanted mass changes to the lineup, everyone out, changing everyone but Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl type thing. And Jay Woodcroft stuck with the team. And look at the results. Like, at times, you sometimes just have to look at it and go, that was a bad game. It's a best of seven series. It's not a best of one. Bad game. Move on. Throw it away. Make adjustments. You always have to be looking at making adjustments. But going at it in game two and seeing what happens. You know, and I don't think you're going to see from Jay Woodcroft this mass changes. Like, maybe he'll shift how the lines go. You know, we saw that from 5 to 6.
Yes.
But you're not going to, I don't think, see Bouchard coming out of the lineup. You're not going to see, you know, 3-4 lineup changes, if you will, for this Oilers team. It's one game. The Oilers lost game one last series. They were down 3-2 last series. They found a way to win game two. They found the win at 2-3. They found a way to win 6-7. Let's see what happens tomorrow night.
One more from Justin here says, anyone who says the Oilers have to be more physical is not on the ice playing against Lucic and Gudbranson. Give your head a shake. Oil, unfortunately, have no answers for those two. No one is touching those two on the Oilers. Lucic looked ready to rip Kane's head off if the linesman didn't get in the way. Thanks, Justin. I mean... Those guys are huge human beings, first of all, Gudbranson and Lucic. Yes, physical. Lucic, you saw him impose his will, but why can't you play physical against them? It doesn't mean you have to go and blow them up in a hit. Is that even a possibility? No, it's probably unlikely. We get that. But, like, you can go and play hard hockey. You don't have to be a beast of a human being to do that. And the Oilers simply didn't. They were very soft. Everybody from the top down, super soft in that game, just on their heels. Maybe you could make a case for Zach Hyman. You could definitely make a case for Connor McDavid that they weren't soft. But there's nothing to suggest the Oilers, whatever their size, weight individually are. You tell me you can't go play hard hockey, be tough on the puck, hard in the corners, battle, quick to the puck in races. Just hard hockey. It doesn't matter how big you are. The will to win is important. And it seemed like Edmonton didn't have that. And they wilted away. And still, again, I'll say it one more time, wound up at 6-6 somehow. Early in the third period. Now, they blew that opportunity, not surprisingly, with the way they were playing, the goaltending they were getting. But you regroup, should feel shame after last night. Absolutely. And remember why this team was able to put together a very solid season that saw them wind up with 104 points, that saw them beat the Flames twice out of four games. Yes, both times on home ice. But, yeah, sure, you got two big guys from Calgary that run around. You could throw Brett Ritchie in there as well. Maybe Zadorov, too. Sure, but, like, head on a swivel, play hard hockey. You don't have to be a giant of a human being to do that. Start simple. Go from there. It can happen. There's no way the belief system should be gone. No way. So we'll see how they regroup tomorrow. The team did talk today at the hotel where it held its availability. We'll try to get that audio for you.
We will have audio in the 140.
Perfect.
We'll hear from Jay Woodcroft and Zach Hyman at the very least.
Good. There you go. Maddie confirming it. More of your texts, of course, in regard to last night's game. What are you looking forward to in game two? Have you lost faith? How you feeling? One text says, even Mother Nature did not like the outcome of the Battle of Alberta. Yeah, both cities. Gloomy, cold, windy. Rain in Edmonton. Just very blah and meh here in Calgary. That's a great way to describe it. We'll take a little breather when we come back. F1 Talk with Eric Thomas from Raceline Radio, and then more Oilers chatter right here on the Dave Jamieson Show on Edmonton Sports Center, TSN 1260. 1:21 in Edmonton. Good afternoon. You're listening to the Dave Jamieson Show here on TSN 1260. Tom Gazzola coming at you from Calgary. Matthew Iwanek holding it down at 1260 HQ back in good old our town. If you want to get in on the discussion, hit us up at the James H. Brown Alberta Injury Lawyers inbox 101260. James H. Brown, when accidents happen, go to jameshbrown.com. Time now to talk a little F1 with Eric Thomas from Raceline Radio. And Eric, I know we're all looking forward to the Spanish GP this weekend.
Yes, sir.
We had the Miami Grand Prix. It was interesting. First time out there. The weird fake water with the yachts and the party area and all of that. You know, some people thought it was cheesy. Some people thought it was clever. I didn't mind it. I thought on TV it looked fine. But what did you make of the first ever race in Miami there?
It was interesting. And I'm kind of wondering in looking at that, once you saw that fake marina in that one little corner of the place in Miami, it was quite obvious it was fake. But there was so much coverage of that before the race started, so you're kind of looking for it. So then when you saw it, you went, oh, come on. That, you know what gets me, though? They're in Miami, Florida. They've got an ocean, just a few feet away no matter where you are in that state, and they have to fake water? That's kind of weird to me. But the notoriety was they were running around the perimeter where the Miami Dolphins and the NFL play. So it was kind of the best of both worlds. They kept on saying the place was jammed, and it was, but it wasn't capacity. And in looking at the ledger after the race, they actually did lose a little bit of money, which is not really unusual the first time they try this. But it is F1's plan and modus operandi, I guess, is to establish more races in the continental U.S. and in North America, because why not? You sell an awful lot of Mercedes in the United States / Canada. You sell a lot of Ferraris, et cetera, et cetera. Not as many as you do in China, but you want to get the Americans sparked about it. So they had the race in Austin, Texas at the Circuit of the Americas. They added the race in Miami. They're going to be adding a race in Las Vegas down the strip, which is going to be unbelievably great. And now, just this morning before you came on, I looked at the wire, and this has been sort of percolating on the back burner for quite a bit now, is that there's still a move, although it's been smothered so much by noise people, the mitigation people, environmental people, of running a race in New York City, basically in New Jersey, along the Hudson River with the New York skyline in the background, which would be unbelievable. Now, the new mayor there has proposed a site that the FIA says we don't really want to get into a battle right now, but we're going to be adding more races in the United States. I never thought they should have left Indianapolis, but that's another story for another day. But that's one of the things that's happening on the expansion horizon with Formula One. They're not going to replace the Russian Grand Prix for reasons that are obvious, so they're going to have 22 races next year. But they're looking to expand their footprint in the USA, and maybe with Colton Herta on the IndyCar side and Michael Andretti, you know, looking to do something in Formula One. Maybe we have an American driver involved in F1, which would be a big breakthrough. I mean, in Montreal in Canada, we've had the GP for a while. We've had Jacques Villeneuve there, and, of course, his dad before that, and, you know, all kinds of Canadian involvement in F1. But they want to increase that footprint in the U.S., and they're definitely on the path to doing that.
Eric, speaking of Canadian involvement, I'll ask you about the performances of Nicholas Latifi as well as Lance Stroll. How are our Canadian boys doing, and where do they stack up when it comes to all of this? Because I know one thing is the car that you build and the money you have and all of that, but, you know, we do have a couple of Canadians in F1, but they're non-factors, it seems like, week in and week out.
You're right. No, that's a good way to describe it. They're not impactful, they're non-factors, which is, you know, kind of unfortunate. I think the thing that really upset it this year was the fact that we did see a great improvement from Lance Stroll last year compared to the year before, where he was not scoring points, to the year previous to this one, where he was scoring points and finishing in the top 10 on a regular basis with, you know, the newly labeled Aston Martin team and with Sebastian Vettel, the four-time champion, there as his teammate, and he was making progress. Well, they come up with a brand-new car, new regulations, which has really affected Lewis Hamilton. There's another headline story, and it's going to be the headline story of the year as far as I'm concerned, and we get to that in a second. But with the new regulations, he's been reverting to the old Lance Stroll, getting in the way, causing crashes. You know, watch these GPs now, all of a sudden, two or three times, look at this. Lance Stroll is under investigation by race control for possibly impeding someone or getting in the way or causing contact, which is unfortunate. I mean, his dad owns the team. We know that. There's nepotism involved there. But he does have some skill. But it's regressed this year. Nick Latifi brings money to Williams. Their basic problem is that they have a dog of a race car, kind of like what Mercedes has, especially for Lewis. And he's not making any progress. And that's unfortunate. And you're getting used to, and that's not good, to see Nick Latifi from Toronto, you know, down in the teens in the finishing order and finishing decidedly out of the points. Can't remember. Don't have it in front of me. Don't remember the last time that Nick Latifi, who brings money to the team, but there's no progress been seen with those two Canadian guys, which is darn unfortunate because, You're used to having Canadians being impactful for the names that we just talked about previous. So whether it gets better, I don't know, but you really, really went back to ground zero when you came out with a new car and new regulations this year, because both of those guys have been in the back, and sadly, I don't see them getting any better before the end of the year.
Yeah, maybe Nick Latifi's claim to fame is what happened in that final race of the season last year. My goodness.
Oh, you want to go there, do you?
I'm just an aside. I'll leave it there, Eric. I'll leave it there.
But no, that's okay. That's okay.
You talk about the new car this year and teams adapting, and you mentioned Lewis Hamilton. Listen, clearly there are teams that have, you know, basically hit the pavement running here, and the wheels are flying out
Ferrari,
there, and we're watching some teams like Ferrari. I'm very impressed with. Obviously, Red Bull's having a great season, but Mercedes, which has been so dominant, and you know, we've got this 7-time world champion in Lewis Hamilton. He's a non-factor this year. He's in sixth. He's got 36 points. What's going on with Mercedes? How did they get this so wrong? They brought in George Russell, who's supposed to be the next up and comer, but
and he's better
how
than
would
Lewis.
You sum it up?
Better than Lewis,
right.
It's as I said, I think unless something incredible like a nuclear explosion really or anything huge comes up, I cannot see the Lewis Hamilton non-factor story being replaced by anything else at the end of this racing season. I still think it's the story of the year. When he got robbed out of a record-breaking 8th championship in Bahrain, and you mentioned Latifi creating that last yellow where all of a sudden the race director decided to bend the rules, and if he hadn't have done that, it would have been Lewis's championship for sure. Anybody with any kind of common sense would say to yourself, all right, we know there's new regulations coming out, and there's always upset when that happens, where most of the downforce and ground effects are coming from the underside of the car. So now Mercedes comes up with a radical car that basically doesn't have side pods. You would think that Lewis Hamilton and Merck would come out of the box with all guns and barrels blazing, with fitful vengeance to show these guys, we're gonna mow everybody down. You're not going to take this championship away. And they come out with a race car that he can't use. It's uncompetitive. And here's the damning part of it. They don't seem to be able to fix it. And Toto Wolff, the guy in charge of the team, is saying we may have to go back and use an older car or something because we can't get this one to work. And I'm going, what, are you guys crazy? God, Mercedes is a multi-billion dollar enterprise, and you're going to turn and tell me that your technicians, your scientists, engineers, and boffins can't fix this thing? Give me a break. Now, coming into the Spanish Grand Prix, they've made some changes. They've changed the floor, the under tray of the car, to try and get it to ride a little lower so it's not what they call porpoising, which is a strange phenomenon where the car is bouncing up and down, nose to tail, like a dolphin when they're swimming at speed. You see it with killer whales, too. They come up, breach the surface of the water, then dive back down nose first. That's what their car is doing, and you can't drive the darn thing. You can't lower it down because it's porpoising all over the place, and that's why Lewis Hamilton is suffering. The damning part of it, part two, is the fact that new guy from Williams, George Russell, has been outperforming Lewis Hamilton in basically the same car. He's got a different setup on the car than Lewis does, but he's doing better in terms of scoring points, finishing higher, and qualifying better than Lewis Hamilton in a pig of a race car. And why Merck, right, so dominant, as you said, can't fix it, is another astounding thing that's happened so far in Formula One. And Red Bull's been running away with it, and so has Ferrari. But it's been one of those things we did not expect when this season happened.
The lasting memory I'll have from that final race last year is, no, Michael, no, that is so not right, from Toto Wolff.
Toto Wolff screaming. And of course, that was one of the things that really bothered me, was that the team principals are able to get on the radio and bark at the race director. That's like having the coaches in radio communication with the referees on the ice, you know, during an NHL hockey game. How absurd is that? So they've stopped that ridiculous practice. But in reality, he didn't remove, do we debate this? But he didn't remove all the lap cars, only some of them. And in normal circumstances, you don't do that. And if he hadn't have done that, there is no way that Verstappen would have caught Lewis Hamilton, even on old tires, and taken that championship away. That's the reason why Michael Massey ain't the race director anymore, boys and girls. And that's the reason why that happened. And Lewis Hamilton has taken an awful long time to recover. Now, he's still upbeat. He says, we're going to fix this. But he's already conceded the championship. Heck, he conceded it in April. I mean, it's unbelievable. He says, I can't win this championship. And it's only April, and they race right through to the fall. I mean, what? What? That's how drastic that whole thing is. It wasn't good. It's still not good. So
no, No, Eric Thomas joining us now from Raceline Radio. We're talking F1, getting set for the Spanish GP this weekend. It's been an interesting start to the F1 season. We've gone over that, certainly. Through five races, Charles Leclerc has got the 19-point lead over defending world champion, controversial one at that, Max Verstappen. You said, Eric, Lewis, not even a factor in this series, conceding that he's not even going to be in the mix for the championship, and we'll see what they can do, Mercedes, throughout the rest of the season with that car.
They can do something, yeah.
Right. What have you made of the battle between Red Bull and Ferrari and the way Charles Leclerc seems to be dialed in? And then Max Verstappen, when he isn't DNFing, he's just winning the race.
And the engine's shutting up, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Red Bull and Christian Horner and that crew have had their own problems. They have twice now, all of a sudden, Verstappen's engine just stops running. You know, and it's the computer service system in there, or spark, or fuel, or whatever it is. Twice that's happened to him. We were really hoping that Ferrari would jump in and make this a three-way fight with Mercedes and Red Bull. And they have, unfortunately, the Mercedes side of it dropped out, so we're back to a two-horse race. I mean, I don't think anybody out there is questioning Charles Leclerc is one of the brightest stars to come around in a long, long time in Formula One, and their car, they were ready for this season. One thing that happened with Ferrari is there used to be a revolving door in terms of keeping their engineers and keeping their people, and that stopped at the same time in the offseason. The last couple of years, Mercedes lost some of their key people. So you've got an infrastructure staffing situation befallen Mercedes, which has contributed to the fact that the car isn't competitive. At the same time, Ferrari, under Matteo Binotto, have been able to keep more of their key people back at the factory, which is one of the reasons why that the Ferraris have been a whole lot better this year, you know, with Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz, you know, especially with Leclerc. I mean, this kid is really good, really talented, never takes everything too seriously. And then you got Verstappen on the Red Bull side. The car is very good. If they can just keep the damn engine running, you know, they're going to be okay. You know, I mean, yeah, you kind of need the engine running to race. But it's a two-horse race, darn it, but it should have been three. And Mercedes got left at the gate and stumbled out of the gate. Whether they can fix it before the end of the year, I mean, the championship is already lost. But, I mean, we expected Ferrari to be better. We expected Red Bull and Verstappen to be good this year as the defending champions. They have been. They are going to get over their few little mechanical problems. But Mercedes dropping out of the picture, no, as you said, nobody expected that. But that's the reality of the situation this year so far.
Eric, we have an F1 Fantasy League here at 1260. Guys take it seriously. Joaquin Gage leading that. He's updating us every morning in the group chat. But can you quickly tell me what the heck happened to McLaren? Because I was running out of money in my fantasy team, and I took McLaren, and they are just having a terrible season. What the heck is going on?
Not as good as everybody expected. Every once in a while, they show some brilliance. But I can understand you putting money on McLaren because I like Lando Norris a lot. I do. Yeah. And there's a lot of potential there. You know, they just, again, they haven't been able to translate that. And again, it circles back to what we said off the start of this interview, is the fact that when you come out with new regulations, and it's a radical change where most of the downforce for these cars to corner quick is coming from the under tray of the car. They still have wings in the front. They still have wings aft. But most of the downforce comes from the car's under tray, and that it takes some getting used to in terms of how the car handles, how the cars operate, what kind of turbulent air or dirty air is behind each car. That seems to have been improved a lot. The first few races, we saw an awful lot of passing that we haven't seen in the last 10 years in Formula One, which is really, really good. McLaren has sort of been left at the station a little bit, but I have a lot of faith in Lando Norris and Ricciardo, and I think, especially with Lando, I think that's a lot of potential they can ride on. If the McLaren people can improve that race car, they're going to start scoring points and more points on a regular basis. I like McLaren because of Lando Norris, and I don't think that's a bad bet. Yeah, it may not be paying off right now, but I think it will pay dividends in the future.
Maybe I'll hang on to them on my F1 fantasy
team.
Yeah,
I would. I would. I mean, if you can afford to lose a few bob, why not? You know.
Exactly. Eric, we're looking forward to the Spanish GP this weekend. Phenomenal stuff today. Thanks for hopping on, and look forward to doing this again somewhere down the line.
Absolutely. Look forward to talking to everybody. 7 o'clock Saturday mornings, Raceline Radio right here in TSN 1260. Let's do this again soon, guys. Always lots of fun.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Eric Thomas from Raceline Radio. Yes, indeed, you can hear him here on TSN 1260. Great energy from him, calling it like it is. We'll see what happens this weekend at the Spanish GP. When we return here on the Dave Jamieson Show, we will hear from the Oilers and their availability at the hotel. No skate for them today as they prep for Game 2 tomorrow night, looking to bounce back after a shellacking last night at the hands of the Calgary Flames. Yes, they tied it up at 6 early in the third, but that was not a good performance. So we'll see what the Oilers have to say when we come back right here on TSN 1260. 1:44, good afternoon. Tom Gazzola from Calgary, TSN 1260 Satellite Studios. Matty Iwanek back at home base as we take you through the rest of the Dave Jamieson Show. What an afternoon slash morning it's been. A fire at the arena in Helsinki postponed the Canada-Kazakhstan game, which at last check, Canada was winning 3-2 going
4-2.
Into the first intermission. 4-2 now. There you go. Matthew, you were very upset with the performance of Canada earlier. Yes.
They were down 1-0 and 2-1 to Kazakhstan. Kazakhstan! Like, come on!
So, we had to switch things up. We were going to have that game live for you here on 1260. Didn't happen. What was supposed to be an abbreviated lowdown with Gazzola and Iwanek turned into a full 2 hours, and that transitioned into a full Dave Jamieson Show with the two of us. So thanks for bearing with us. We appreciate you, as always. The Jason Gregor Show coming up next. And a couple of texts before we go to the Oilers sound from today. TubeSock says, this guy is awesome. Pig of a race car. That's gold. And then Tom chimes in with Eric Thomas has a great voice. Eric Thomas from Raceline Radio. Another text says, loved his Euro accent when talking about Mercedes. Yeah, great stuff from Eric Thomas today, doing his best Toto Wolff impersonation. So a big thank you to him. Matt says, Booth says, great job, Matty, and you got to have Eric Thomas on the show more. Love the energy and humor he brings. He's phenomenal. He knows what he's doing. He knows his racing inside and out, and certainly we appreciate him stopping by on short notice, of all things. Matthew, with that, let's get to the Oilers stuff, and let's hear from Zach Hyman, who spoke to the media today at the team hotel.
How would you sort of classify a loss like that, and is that a little bit more tough to wash away and start fresh, or how does it resonate the next morning?
Well, it's probably easier, actually, just because, you know, we didn't play well at all, right? It's wasn't one of those games where it's a tight one and you lose it in overtime and you're thinking, man, like, we should have won that game. This was just when you wash away and, you know, you're down 1-0 and you get back to work.
Similar feeling to LA in that respect? It seems like you had some similar feelings.
I mean, different game. I thought in that LA, that game one, that we came back and, you know, we actually had a chance to win that one. This one, we came back, but, you know, we didn't deserve to win it at all. So. But yeah, same situation. We're down 1-0, and we're down 1-0 here. So
when you come back and it's 6-6, and you think, okay, as poor as we're playing, we still might actually win this.
Yeah, for 30 seconds, I think, right? Whatever it was, they scored a shift or two shifts later, right? Yeah. So you didn't really have much time to think on it. But yeah, I mean, just a crazy game.
When you look back on it, Zach, after a sleep, what do you feel was lacking most, and how quickly can you fix that?
I think a bunch of things, to be honest. Defensive awareness, being physical, being hard to play against. We gave up way too many grade A chances early on. I mean, before we could blink, we were down 2-0, right? So that can't happen in a playoff game in round two. So just numerous things, but yeah, just wash that one away and get ready for the next one.
Why do you think the power play just didn't generate anything?
I think it was just a symptom of the whole game. I mean, you can look at the power play and you take away that, you know, we got outworked. It's no different than 5-on-5. We got outworked. You know, we didn't battle. We weren't physical. We didn't have a sense of urgency. So I think just a symptom of the whole game.
You guys have played a lot of good defensive hockey, but the fact remains, the last two times you played Calgary, they pumped 9 past you.
Mm-hmm.
Do we start to wonder if it's, you know, maybe it's not just about you. You got to figure out a way to counter what they do to you.
No, I mean, I think different games, regular season's different than playoffs. But you know, they have a good team. They got depth throughout their lineup. They work. They score in different ways. They score off the cycle. Score off the rush. And I think we just have to get back to focusing on what we do best. And I think when we do that, we're a really hard team to play against.
Does this team need the kind of game you played in 6 and 7, a game where you give up one or two defensively? Is it got to be about your own net more than the other net at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're confident in our ability to score, and I think that we're confident that we're going to get chances. I think that the key for us is, you know, is what can we take away? You know, what can we not let them get? And I think in, you know, 6 and 7, we did that really well against LA, and I think this team has played really well when our backs have been against the wall, and when we've, you know, had a game where we hasn't gone as well as we wanted to. I think we respond really well, so we're going to look to do that in game two.
Sorry, can you take something you spoke about responding well? Mm-hmm. The game in Minnesota, big, heavy team, hard forecheck, and they kind of ran your show a bit in that game, and you guys kind of bounced back. Can you take something out of that? Because Calgary plays with a physical impetus that's completely different than the way LA plays.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, anytime you get beat like that, you want to respond, right? You know, they're a physical team, but I think it, you don't have to be the biggest guy to be physical. You just got to get in their way, get in the forecheck, you know, be strong on your stick and do those things. And I think, you know, game one was a big wake-up call for us to just get back to playing the way that we know we can. And like I said, we didn't really give ourselves a chance in game one win that game.
It's the playoffs, and you're not going to win every game. But is it concerning to you that it's kind of been – either really, really good or it's been really, really rough? Just the dramatic swings in the quality of your play that you might not want to see at this time of year. Is that fair?
No, I think it's fair. I mean, I think it's kind of, you know, a little bit like the season that we've had. But I think for us, you know, we want to remain consistent. I think that, you know, game 6 and 7, we put together two strong games back-to-back. I think it was, you know, led by strong defensive efforts, right? So I think that the blueprint's there for us to take that step. And like I said, this was an unorthodox game, so we're going to wash game one and get back to what we do best.
Unorthodox, an understatement. 9-6, the Oilers fall to the Flames last night. All right, let's hear from Jay Woodcroft, who spoke at the team hotel earlier today.
Did a second look reveal anything that wasn't, you know, maybe present right after the game?
No, it confirmed a lot of the things that we saw. And bottom line, it was not good enough for us. We scored 6 even strength goals. That should be enough to win a game. For us, our checking skills, our defending fundamentals have to really improve. We scored 6, but we gave up 7 even strength.
Those roller coaster games, though, where does the game come from? You're checking, and all of a sudden it's a high-scoring game, and then you get back to it.
Yeah.
So as a coach behind the bench, you're looking at, what happened here? You played just 2 excellent games.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, this one just gets away.
Yeah, and you know, it's a new series for us and a different team with different capabilities. And for us, I really believe we have to get back to defending properly. And that is something that we've hung our hat on here for the last 3 months or so. I think it's what's led to some of our success. We have always held the belief that we feel that we're going to score enough to win games. But for us, our work back to our own end, our detail in our own end, certainly is an area of improvement that we're going to focus on.
You said a few times you liked the production of the 6 goals that you scored.
Yeah.
How did you feel like you played offensively? Were you happy with the chances that you generated and the work in the offensive zone overall?
Well, I was happy that we hung 6 goals on their starting goaltender on the road. For us, I think that we can do some things a little bit harder in the offensive zone and a little bit earlier in the game. I'm going to the defending side of things. Certainly, we can be a lot better on that side of things, but offensively, we can be harder early in the game, and then you might not find yourself down the way we did.
Jay, is there a significant difference at all in how you have to defend successfully against a team that's much more aggressive on the forecheck in Calgary compared to Los Angeles? How do you have to defend different?
You know what, Jason? I would actually say that LA's forecheck presented some real interesting issues, different type of forecheck. I think Calgary gets a lot of offense from their D. So when the puck gets up to the point, they shoot a lot of pucks and they keep pucks alive. So for us, yeah, it's a different challenge. We're focusing on different things. our belief is that the better we are at breaking out, the less time you're spending in your own zone. So we want to make sure that our ratio of breakouts compared to D-zone coverage is where we want it to be. We want to play defense the right way, but we just don't want to spend a lot of time there.
This might sound odd, but were you checking too aggressively to the outside and leaving the middle open?
I would say that there was some things that showed up in our game that we haven't seen in a few months. And so for us, I thought, can we be better? We can be better for sure.
You didn't blend, those pulling Mike.
Yeah.
Maybe the first goal didn't look like it was very good. But the other two goals, you just figured, okay, they've already got three. I got to make another team.
Well, I'm a big believer in sequence of events. And I saw us give up a goal in the first shift of the game on a play that for us is easy, you know, something that we've identified as something that of how we want to check it. We didn't do a good job on that. They scored on the second shift. We called a timeout. After that, we gave up another goal. And for me, it wasn't even about Mike. It was about our team in that moment. And I was just trying to slow the game down. And, in the end, there's certainly lots to work on. We found a way to tie it up in the third period. As I said, we hung six goals on their starting goaltender in their building. That should be enough to win a game. But there's things that we're going to focus on to make sure that we're taking care of our end a little bit better to help Mike and Miko.
There you go. There's Jay Woodcroft from earlier today. Mike Smith will start game two. One last text from John W. Maybe you want to do a spoiler alert before you mention the Team Canada score. Please, thanks. John, it's Team Canada against Kazakhstan in the World Hockey Championship, and you're listening to a sports station. Come on, man. Come on. Maddie, any final words?
Well done for these 4 hours. Well done. Oof,
you survived.
And also, like, some play off you, Tommy, from other people, because you did 4 hours when you were expecting only to do one today, so well done.
Thanks for your help, pal. It was a lot of fun. Big thank you to Farhan Lalji from TSN and Eric Thomas from Raceline Radio. And to all of you for tuning in and texting in. Coming up next, the Jason Greger Show with Jason Greger, Jason Strudwick, and Connor Halley. Have a fantastic afternoon. Regroup and be ready to go for tomorrow. We're on the air at 6:30 for the Don Wheaton GM on White pregame show. Ciao for now.